Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is your hostess, Bonnie Kay. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions during this broadcast, you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E at AOL.com. Before I introduce my special guest for tonight, I just want to mention the Healing Weekend is upon us. We are only a couple months away. The end of April, we'll be meeting right outside of Washington, D.C. in Virginia. And I'm really excited. We're going to have some wonderful therapists who are there to help you through your healing experience. It's a day of sharing, a day of caring, a day of talking, and just getting yourself on the right track. We'll have people there who have been to several of these before because healing is an ongoing process. And we'll have some new women who really need the support and who will be getting it while they're there. So if you're interested in joining up for the Healing Weekend, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com. Or you can go to my website at gayhusbands.com and just there under the Healing Weekend, click in for information. Without any further ado or announcements, I'm so excited to have a very special guest with me tonight, a woman who unfortunately took me a long time to discover, but now that I found her, I'm never letting her go. And her name is Dr. Judith Reisman, and I am just so in awe of the work that this woman has done in her lifetime. Just to mention a few facts about her, she's the president of the Institute for Media Education. She is nationally recognized as an authority on Dr. Alfred Kinsey, that man who created those controversial Kinsey scales of male sexuality. She's also been the author of the U.S. Department of Justice for the U.S. Department of Justice Juvenile Justice Study, Images of Children, Crime and Violence in Playboy, Penthouse, and Hustler. Kinsey, Sex and Fraud is another book she put out, and Soft Porn Plays Hero, Cardball, Partner Solicitation Language. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. She's a guest for so many different seminars, symposiums here and around the world, because she is an expert on human sexuality, especially an advocate for children. And in a time like this, right now, where things are just going so amok, I felt this is just such a timely show, and I appreciate, Dr. Reisman, you joining us tonight. I think I've mentioned to you that through the years that I really challenged the whole Kinsey scale, and I know that a lot of people feel offended by my, well, a lot of gay people feel offended by my doing this, not straight people. But, you know, as I kept doing more and more research and I found some of your findings that were referred to me by members of my group, I mean, they found you for me. And when I started reading all your materials and your book and some of your articles, listening to your broadcast, I was floored because this was not my intention. Originally, I was just checking out the Kinsey scale that it's used as in defense of men who are having sexual affairs with other men. That is, quote, normal, unquote. But when I found out all of the research that you've done to expose Alfred Kinsey as a really sick man who was involved in all kinds of acts, you know, if not directly, indirectly, with acts with children. So could you address that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Doctor. I would say hair doctor. Alfred Kinsey was a sexual psychopath. He was a sadomasochistic abuser. He liked to be beaten and battered, you know, but he also liked to harm others. Especially, you know, that's why he had no reaction to the torture of these children. But he was, of course, an adulterer. I mean, he was bisexual or maybe homosexual. You know, there's no way to distinguish this. There really, it's whatever's convenient. And so he was involved in sadomasochistic abuse. Oh yeah, pornography, right? Very important. He filmed pornographic materials with himself, with other people. You know, males. He wasn't good with females. So you know, he was an pervert. Cut himself, he circumcised himself in a bathtub as an adult when he was teaching everybody else, you know, about their own sexuality and how to be healthfully sexual. He took a piece of, it was a glass, I suppose, to his penis and tried to circumcise himself. He used to hang himself from the basement at Indiana University, hanging himself by his genitals until he collapsed on the floor. A few other things like that. By and large, he was not a healthy man.
That's what I can't understand. Someone who does all these kinds of bizarre actions and who has come up with such research and data about children having sexual experiences and orgasms. One of the articles you sent me came from the Sexual Behavior in Human Male from his book. And
yeah.
It's a chart. It says pre-adolescent boys, since they are incapable of ejaculation, may be as uncertain as some inexperienced females in their recognition of orgasm. In consequence, the record on such early experience is incomplete in most of the histories, and it's yet impossible to make any exact calculation. And then he has a chart, and it says pre-adolescent experience in orgasm. So you might think pre-adolescent meant like maybe 11 or 12, but your chart starts with, not yours, his that you sent me, his chart starts with 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, all the way up to 12 months. And at 12 months, he's claiming that there's a total population of 12, and of the 12 cases, 10 of them were reaching climax, and two of them, I mean, I don't get this. Then up to 1 year, then he goes to 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. These are little children that he's measuring orgasms with?
He was torturing them. Yeah, the children were being tortured. And we have no idea how many children died or how many on that chart never made it on the charts because you died. You cannot do that to wee little things. When I read this, I did my research, okay. I had been working on images of children in Playboy, yeah, and I was giving a paper in England. No, it was in Wales. The British Association, British Psychological Association conference. And I was establishing the ongoing systemic presentation of children, and I mean young children, oh, it could be, you know, maybe 8 years old, in cartoons and in photos, but most of the little ones were in cartoons. Jodie Foster at age 13, nude in Playboy. But anyway, very nude and very good. So I was presenting this material at the conference, and at the end of the conference, a psychologist from Canada who I had had experiences with prior came up to me, and he said, you know, he said, this is really disturbing. He said, I know I've seen all those pictures, but he had denied it to me before. He says, but, and now I know they're all in my brain. So he said, if that's how I react, he said, then what's happening to other people who aren't, you know, don't have my background? He said, but, you know, he said, if you really want to look at the causes of child sexual abuse in our society, he said, you have to look at the Kinsey reports. So I looked at him and I said, why? You know, because I had always heard about Kinsey and I thought he just sounded like a whack job, so I didn't pay any attention. And so he said, well, he said, one, I knew Kinsey, I worked with Kinsey and Pomeroy, that was one of his co-authors. He said, one is a pedophile and the other is a homosexual. So I said, well, which is which? And he looked at me, he said, read and discover. And he turned around and walked away. And, you know, I still haven't been able to trace him, but the man changed my life because, you know, I was trying to figure out why all these kids were being shown in Playboy, and it turned out Playboy was being constructed by, published by Hugh Hefner, and Hugh Hefner had been a virgin at age 22 in college, and he got a chance, he read Kinsey, and so after reading Kinsey, he said, ah, I will be Kinsey's pamphleteer. He was the science, I will be his pamphleteer. And from there, we got the bona fide lives that everybody's living now in terms of the sexual revolution and the pornography revolution. So Kinsey's had an enormous impact on everything, and especially, I'm not going to be able to go into it to any extent, but I've written extensively on his impact on the laws. But part of the impact on the laws has been that crazy scale. He just had to have just draw his angle, and there you are. He made a scale, and it's quoted everywhere. Are you there?
Yes, I'm sorry. After I read your articles, this is what I wanted to ask you with the scale. What I was wondering is this. I read a number of the articles that he was, quote, bisexual or homosexual. Has your research shown that also?
Oh, yeah, of course. He was probably homosexual. But he in those years, you know, he had a wife who would be a beard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The wife was his beard. And, you know, he created, I imagine, he was responsible for the, he had four kids. So to establish himself, you had to do that in those years, you know, you had to be normal. So, but he arranged, he had a bedroom on the second floor, and he would bring his boyfriend there and have sex with his boyfriend and stopped having any kind of sexual interaction with his wife. So, yeah, I mean, he did what he had to do and then moved on.
Now, also, I read that his scale that was based on his 0 to 6 was also primarily derived from talking to males who were homosexual. Is that what you've learned?
Yeah, I mean, the scale is worthless. It's nothing. He just created something. He wanted something visual that would have numbers, And so he created this illusionary scale. And I've always thought it was interesting and very revealing. At the bottom of the scale, you note, there's a 0 for heterosexual. So anybody who is straight gets a 0. At the top end of the scale is a 6. So anybody for homosexual. But he's created the concept of fluency. That there is no male, or female. Everything is fluid, and you can be who you want to be. That's also a lot of Aleister Crowley's, be who I will be. He made up everything. He made up everything except that. Certainly, I think. True that the children were tortured. He had those exact figures down there. And he never used the word child. He was very careful to say pre-adolescent, never spoke about children.
The interesting thing is that on this report that you sent me from his book, here it has the total number of people who were followed was 317 under the age of 15 or under.
Right.
And to me, that was just amazing that so many children, I just don't gather how this is even feasible, that this man was able to get away with this information, not brought to trial for talking about sex with children.
When I wrote the book, There was a man, a PhD in sociology at Penn State. Hobbs, no, I don't remember now. Okay. Anyway, he said he was very critical of Kinsey. None of the information about Kinsey that was critical, really, nothing that would address the children, was ever released. I mean, it just was... if you look at the books, there they are. So he said, he criticized me. He wrote criticisms. He was a statistician as well. And, Kinsey talked about a population. He had a population of one, which he called statistically a population. I mean, the man, he hired people. He pretended he had statisticians on his staff. He had no statisticians. Staff. He just lied. So anyway, he said to me when we were talking on the phone before he died, this gentleman who had been critical of Kinsey, he said, I cannot believe, he said that as much as I went over his books, I did not process that these were children. I just didn't see it. And so I thought that was so interesting because, people in those years basically couldn't believe, and you just wouldn't believe. Your mind could not encompass the fact these would be children, even though it says right there, these are orgasm tests. Time them, at how many minutes, down to the second, from one orgasm to the next, the six-year-old was tested for 24 hours. That's a clinical experiment around the clock, where he said the child had 26 orgasms in 24 hours. These were torture, and of course I've been trying to get the Kinsey Institute investigated for years, but to no avail. They've got enormous power, enormous support from the Rockefellers, from the Fords, from the Pentagon. So it's been an uphill battle to try and get this information out to people who really his stuff and he believes him. And it's not in school.
I think what really upset me was this, above the and beyond what would normally upset anybody, was that recently, with all the publicity that these gymnasts are getting, these young girls who went into the gymnasts and who are sexually abused by Dr. Larry Nassar, and I was watching her testimonies on television on 2020 2 weeks ago, and when you would listen to them one at a time tell their story of how these sexual experiences damaged their souls, their lives, their anxiety, their trust to ever have a normal relationship. And here I am thinking about these little children, you know, just was weighing so heavily on my mind listening to them about the information that I found through you about all of these children who had to go through all kinds of sexual observations. Now, I mean, to be honest with you, Dr. Reisman, where do you get these kind of stats? Somebody must be doing something to the children. They're not just laying there having orgasms. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. No, well, depending on what he called orgasms. You know, you see what he wrote. He said he called it an orgasm when the child fainted.
Right.
You know, he called it an orgasm when somebody, the little boy, was striking the man who was raping him, you know, and trying to get away. He called these orgasms. He called it an orgasm when the children, I'm quoting him, wept hysterically. What? Only, and I read that. That's when I realized only a sadomasochistic pedophile or a sadomasochistic terrorist, because he's homosexual, would ever, you know, conclude in a million years that those orgasms, these were children who were fighting, screaming, crying, trying to get away, and he wrote that they were having orgasms. Now, I have heard that from many men since who have raped children, and their defense has been, oh, he didn't mind, she didn't mind it, because, he said, I could tell by their face, I could tell by the way they were behaving. Well, that means if the child screams and cries and strikes you, don't say that is an orgasm. That's a psychopath.
Mm-hmm. I know that there are groups that are out there who advocate child-adult sex.
Sure.
And they've been out there for a long time in the straight community and in the gay community. I know that, you know, I had looked into the group NAMBLA many years ago when I had first heard about it. And I guess I was young and naive, and I could not believe that such a group advocating adult child sex could actually exist. And just to let people know, there are certainly groups, in this, you know, who are heterosexual who also have groups about adult child sex. And, like, for instance, what you brought out in a lot of your writing was that, you know, when you had stories like Lolita, or you had girls who were seductresses at a young age, or Jodie Foster in the movie, you know, Taxi, where you're showing and you're showing young girls and having pleasurable sex. And this is kind of like accepted, that people don't question this. They're saying, oh, you know, and they're saying, wow, you know, she's a Lolita, or look at Jodie Foster, that people aren't so alarmed by this, you know, that they would think, oh, this is okay. And you know, I think that part of your fight is with the whole pornography, but to actually have groups that are advocating this, how does this go on? See, I just don't get it. And I know that for me, I know that many years ago when I had this battle in the gay community with gay men, not the women, because they had these books of NAMBLA that were like in a gay bookstore here in Philadelphia, you know, where I live.
Right.
And I went in and I was like very distraught, and I said, how can you leave these books out here, you know, from this group NAMBLA, or these pamphlets? And, you know, I had a big fight because they said, well, you know, you can't sit and judge, because a lot of times kids, when they're 13 or 14, you know, they're looking for an adult because they want somebody who can bring them into their comfort. I mean, they gave me every kind of reason, but I said, a 10-year-old boy, you're showing pictures of 10-year-old boys having, you know, that males are going for, and you don't think there's something wrong with this? And, of course, I lost the battle, and I wrote about it. I used to write a column called Straight Talk for the Gay Community paper here. where I would question things, why people look at things this way. And I was very distraught over that. But yet, like I say, there's other groups in the heterosexual community that have the same thing. And I think this is truly a sickness, right?
Yeah, it certainly is. And it's grown rapidly. We now face what's been defined by the FBI, good old FBI, as an epidemic of child sexual abuse and child pornography. I mean, the book by Lori Handrahan, I must recommend that, as well, of course, as all my books. But Epidemic, Americans Portrayed in Child Rape, right, which she just published, and you can get that on Amazon. You really have to get that because she breaks it down into professions. Massive number of men who are, you know, like doctors, lawyers, professors in school. She's getting university professors a month, no, a week, well, anyway, in who are being picked up now. Like, well, since Trump has been president, there's been an unprecedented arrest rate, and they're picking up these guys right and left, and they're arrested for child pornography. But, you know, nobody gets arrested for pornography. Forget that. So, it's a huge problem, and the children are getting all this in school through sex education. The sex education is absolutely designed to sexualize and to groom the children. People know what they're doing. Some don't, but mostly they do. So, at the earliest age, at primary age, and we have a huge problem here.
So, if you go back, I know that you're kind of open about what got you involved in this whole issue, because you had quite a wonderful artistic background, and I told you I just discovered recently this week that you were a musician as far as writing songs, beautiful songs, you have a beautiful voice, and, you know, I was just sitting and listening and just getting so much comfort out of it, but I guess that's because I'm from a different generation. I like things simple now, simple and nice and pleasant, you know, such a change. But, you know, you had a daughter that you were open about who had a bad experience, correct?
Yeah. My daughter, Jenny, she was raped by the boy upstairs when she was 13, when she was 10 and he was 13. She didn't tell me about it for almost a year. She finally confessed what happened because I could tell, she was acting very strangely. And it turns out that the boy was sexually assaulting children all over the neighborhood, but including his brother, his little brother. He sexually assaulted the boy. But he was protected by the psychological community because he was being given therapy. So they never told anybody what he was doing to the other children. When I found out about it, not only to immediately leave the guy, the kid had been sent back to England by his parents. My daughter said, "Don't be told. I don't want you to see it." And I, later on, I realized if I had reported it, all of our lives would be changed to the extent that we had a peer rape kind of provision, opportunity for peer rape without paying a penalty if there was 2 years. 5 years different between the child and the offender, that there's nothing to say. Oh, well, just that, not to worry. So the argument used to be, it was a kin's argument, and it still is, only hysteria. If you're uptight about sex, you get hysterical,
that's the problem. You'll do more harm to the child than the event itself, and so on and so on. But that is what led me into examining the law and to see how often Kinsey had been quoted in laws, and you change our laws with use in life or most in death, you know, from becoming a simple rape, you know. So the laws were changed naturally, and it's based on quote unquote science. It had to, you know, you needed to have a precedent for something, and that precedent turned out to be we thought was science, the science, sex science. So Kinsey had an enormous impact on laws, and I really urge everybody to read his book, what is it, Sex, Honor, something like that, I remember which one, because really there's a great deal of work that I put into understanding what happens to our laws.
Let me ask you a question, Dr. Reisman. In your opinion, because you have so much experience with this, I used to do some work for an agency that was for child abuse prevention, you know, when I was much younger, and I was a speaker for them. And in my training, they told me that 87% of children who are abused become abusers. And this also spoke to children who are sexual abusers. And do you think that is the case?
No, not necessarily. I think it's not at all, really. I don't know what the percentages are, but that's a very high number too. And there's no reason to frighten people with that kind of statistic, because I don't think it holds. I know many, many, many people who have been sexually molested, sexually abused, and they have not turned out to themselves. However, it does make them vulnerable to being further abused, you know, to experiencing more abuse. That is true. That it leaves them vulnerable to that. But that they become abusers, not necessarily. We don't know what the percentages are.
Okay, I appreciate that. So let's go back to your battle against porn and the whole sexual revolution, because that was something that you feel that has put us in the place that we're in today. And that if we go back to the times of the sexual revolution, I know that for me, I was a teenager. I was 17 or 18 when I was at the height, I believe, in the late 1960s. And I was living in California, and it was really confusing for me, because it was a new way of life out there that I wasn't used to. And everything as far as sex was concerned was anything goes and everything goes. And I remember going out there and hearing about orgies. Now, of course, to be honest with you, I was a little too innocent to get involved in them, or just it didn't feel right, the whole, you know, whole thing that have sex with whoever you want and bunches of people having sex together. So that wasn't never my thing, but it was very prevalent out there, and nobody even thought twice about it. You know, it was just kind of an accepted thing of the sexual, quote, revolution. And it seemed like it wasn't unusual. You know, I was sexually promiscuous at that time, too, you know, the one person at a time. But I was only 17 or 18 years old, you know, as a flower child, I guess, you know, whatever they wanted to call us back then. But, you know, it seemed like once that started, there was just no end to it. You know,
well,
there was no going back.
What ended it was the spread of herpes. Suddenly, everybody was getting herpes, yeah? So that slowed things down quite a lot. That was, I think, I don't remember now the year that, you know, it was on the cover of Time. But the herpes really got, you know, interfered with people's sense that they could go against all of history, all of biology, you know, we can defeat it all by just dancing around and doing our thing. And history and biology came out, you know, like a ton of bricks on our orgy party because it wasn't working out. And people were committing suicide and getting involved in highly, you know, and all the, you know, out of wedlock births, which we used to call, what did we call them? We called them, anyway. And subsequent to that, of course, you're talking about unbelievable rates of STDs going off the charts. So that the, you know, it reminds me of Playboy first for a long time had cartoons about the girls who had been in having a good time and they got pregnant, right? Because you didn't have abortion and contraception. Contraception wasn't even talked about to any extent in those years. So everybody started having these babies, and Playboy did all these jokes about it until contraception hit and abortion hit, and then they started no more jokes about that. You know, it's kind of fun. But Playboy doesn't do any jokes about sexually transmitted diseases because that's off the chart. We've got, I think, the last count was 40-some new sexually transmitted diseases. And young women are getting, you know, really serious uterine infections from doggy-style posture, not anal. Anal is bad enough, but doggy-style kind of thing. Very serious urinary tract infection, and so people die from those things. So between that and herpes and everything else that's come down the pike, it seems to be a problem with massive promiscuity. No, it's not working out really that well.
I know about 20% of the women that come through my support network have some kind of STD from their gay husband who was not considerate enough to use protection while he was out there having sex with men and brought the infections home to his wife without any regard to, you know, her status. And
right.
I know that I'm sorry.
No, understand, there was never a condom, never. That was approved for anal sodomy, or oral sex. There's never been a condom that was approved by the FCC for these kinds of activities. So between that and the concept of the doggy style, which transmits every disease in the world, there's a lot of infections coming down the pike. Yeah.
There are, and I think if anything really deterred as far as sexual behavior, you know, certainly many of our women have HIV from their husbands.
Yeah.
You know, serious STDs, not just, you know, gonorrhea that you can treat and get it over. As you say, herpes is a lifetime sentence. And even if you have to go for syphilis or gonorrhea, it's very heart-wrenching. But to have HIV and have your life altered forever, that's really heart-wrenching to me.
Yeah, altered and sometimes ended, you know. Come on. There's a lot of reason to maintain your quote, you know, your virginity to be chaste. These ideas have bad reasons, you know, and mostly they were especially protective of women. Come on. What's the big deal having sex with some guy? Give me a break. You know, it isn't that big a deal unless there's some kind of long-term commitment, and you know that the guy's going to stick by you through thick and thin, and it's getting to be pretty thin these days. So, you know, the whole idea of orgasm. So what? Come on, you know, you have an orgasm.
Well, I think we've become a nation that's very sexualized, and we see it all over. And it just becomes nothing special anymore. It's just expected behavior. And I look at a lot of young girls who are having sexual relationships, not based on any kind of anything else but their low self-esteem, and thinking that this
will do something for them, and then they make sure they get pregnant, because at least if they have a baby, they have somebody to love them. And having no realistic expectation of what parenthood is, because at 15 or 16 or 17, what could you possibly know about being a mother? You know, I really feel that you're at a negative point there. I think for teenagers who have a whole life ahead of them, they have no understanding of what it is, you know, for motherhood, and yet, you know, it takes nothing for them to just get into bed with somebody and have a baby. So it's accepted behavior today. It's not exceptional behavior. I know when I was growing up, if you got pregnant when you were in school, you weren't in school anymore. You were whisked away to some kind of home for unwed mothers, and nobody would see you again because it was, you know, something that wasn't accepted. It was something that was a shameful thing. But today, kids are having babies all over the place, and it is accepted. The schools have daycare for the kids, or, you know, they have all kinds of benefits so that they can finish school with their babies.
Yeah.
So I think it's a different way that society has gone, and it's not necessarily a good way, right?
Well, I think it's a terrible way, you know, absolutely terrible. Who's making money on all this? Big pharma's getting paid up the wazoo, you know, all these diseases, you know, they have to be treated. The, you know, the breakdown of any kind of family structure, the government steps in, of course. Big government steps in to take care of your, you know, your kid. But it doesn't take care of your soul, and your heart, and your life at all. So who is making the money? Who is making the money? Follow the dollars. And the children are being groomed. They are being groomed from kindergarten on up. And nowadays with the transgender business, you know, so there's a fortune in the transgender business from surgeons like our friend, you know, operated on the, who assaulted the girls, you know, people like that are absolutely welcome in that business. And it's also a fortune for the pharmaceutical companies who can get lots of money from the blockers and everything else. And then considering the fact that children fall apart pretty quickly. So the psychology, you know, and therapists and the pills for that and depression and so on and so on and so on. So it's a fortune. There isn't much to be made financially from just a man and a woman who, you know, who wait and then they get married and they have their kid. No, there's not a lot of pharmaceutical dollars there.
So you think part of it is the exploitation of the pharmaceutical companies too?
Oh, absolutely. The sexologists work hand in glove with the pharmaceutical companies. They've said so. You know, Big Pharma was waiting for, you know, sexology was waiting for Big Pharma, and Big Pharma was waiting for sexology. You know, for the Viagra, and then the pills for the, you know, the women, get them worked up. Come on, this is going to be a great income for income stream forever. It never stops.
I know. When I was growing up, you know, it was a lot simpler than it is today. You know, you were a boy or you were a girl. Then it got a little more complicated as I got older, you were straight or you were gay. Now it's really complicated. Now you could be anywhere, anything, on any level of any scale. You can be a girl, you can be a guy, you can be a guy who wants to be a girl, you can be a guy who's a cross-dresser but you're not gay, or you can be a cross-dresser and be gay, or you can be a transgender. And I've read a lot of studies on that that say transgender, you know, being transgender is not a physical thing, it's a psychological thing. You know, the doctor over at Harvard University came out with that report that there's nothing physical about transgender. It's a psychological male, gay male need to be feminine, but they call it transgender. So
yeah,
it's very confusing for me.
Yeah. And what else? Oh, yeah, and the books the children are getting. Come on. Jazz, what is it? You know, I Can Be Whatever. I mean, they're books and books. They've been doing this for the past 10 years, writing books.
Uh-huh.
Children's, about how you can be anything you want to be, and you can be transgender, and you can be, well, you can be gay, you can not be gay. Tomorrow you can be a girl, next day you can be a boy. You know, making people absolutely crazy. Again, happy day for the big pharmaceutical companies. When everybody's going nuts, they go to pharmaceuticals to get their fix. If you break between that and drugs, you'll be all right in alcohol. So, okay.
And that opens up a whole new world for people for medication for depression, because while they're going through all this, as they're in all of this, they're still depressed. I mean, it's not that most of them find their happiness by changing, because most of them don't find happiness in doing that.
Of course they do.
You know, the majority of people are depressed, and they are having, you know, and I feel very bad. My heart goes out to anyone who has to suffer over their sexuality. But it's like, it's too confusing now. It really is.
Well, and it, again, understand, it is very purposeful, very purposeful. These poor kids are being sucked into, you know, to fill the coffers and also to fill the psychological needs of an adult community. This is so unfair. So brutally unfair. I mean, this is the best of all possible worlds, really. You have everything here, you know, in the United States. You have hot water. You can turn the lights on. You have the opportunity to do things. Your life. And getting tied into this kind of garbage, changing your sex, being all kinds of weird things, you don't get to advance and do the things that you could do with your life. With your life. And you deserve it. You know, people deserve the best, to do the best that they can for themselves as human beings. And it's absolutely not going to happen for a lot of people.
I agree. I always tell people you have one chance in life. Take every chance you can take, because, you know, you don't get second chances to live again. You know, you have
right.
to do what's to prove yourself, be happy again. I just want to tell our listeners that Dr. Reisman has a beautiful website. I love her website. And it'll be on this broadcast. You'll see it after I update all the information, you know, later tonight. But you can go to her website at drjudithreisman.com. She has her books on here, videos, Stop the Kinsey Institute, which I think after listening to all of this, everybody will want to stop it. I guess my main hope when the people would hear you and hear the documentation that you've come up with is that so many times women are stuck in these marriages that they don't really want to be in with gay men, because the gay men make them feel guilty by saying, just because I have sex with a man doesn't mean that I'm gay, and you can check the Kinsey scale. And they use that as their evidence that they're not really gay, because on that Kinsey scale, you know, there's so many different rungs of the scale. For instance, you can be exclusively heterosexual, which is your zero, but one is predominantly heterosexual, only incidentally homosexual. But then number two is predominantly heterosexual, but more than incidentally homosexual. I don't quite understand that. Three is equally heterosexual and homosexual. Four is predominantly homosexual, but more than incidentally. I mean, I'm not sure what he's using as incidentally. How many experiences does that mean? But, you know, it's like people are using, men use this scale to prove that they're not really gay. Because they'll say,
right.
I'm a one, I'm a two. I'm not gay because Dr. Kinsey says I'm not gay.
Yeah, right. They're listening to a sexual psychopath? Come on.
Right, exactly.
You're basing your belief on a pederast who raped children, on a sex psychopath? You're going to turn to that creepy thing that he designed to make to trick you and to trick your wife, to trick everybody? Come on. This was a lunatic.
And pervert, right?
Oh, God. He was a pervert, is putting it mildly, you know?
How about a pervert psychopath?
A
psychopathic pervert.
Yeah, if he had been exposed at the time, he'd have been clapped in jail so fast he wouldn't have seen the sun.
Well, I mean, I don't understand why people from that time, they were reading these reports. I mean, how did he get away with this? It's beyond me.
Nobody
and now people
could.
Even, and people
yeah.
condemn you because you're exposing this information. I mean, it's in black and white. You're not making this up, letting the public know about it. And you're not
yep.
the only one. There have been plenty of other people who found this out also. I mean, so
yeah,
if people question your credibility, there's something wrong with them because you have the proof. It's in the book.
Look,
correct?
It's right in black and white that he wrote it. How do you debate that, you know? It's in black and white, and he wrote it. His name is on the book. He's famous worldwide for those numbers and for what he wrote. Look, this is a man who said that he interviewed 4,441 women, and there was never a woman that he interviewed who was really suffering from having been raped, ever. Excuse me?
Uh-huh.
Now, look, I believe that pre-sexual revolution, things were a lot better. But 4,441 women and nobody ever had a rape that was, no, come on. So that's how reliable these idiot statistics are. No, you would have
because
with
from the statistics that I've read, it's like 3 out of every 4 or 5 women have to have some kind of sexual abusive experience before they turn 18.
Agreed. I mean, yes, that's now okay. So I say, well, it's gotten worse, but not. You don't go from nothing out of 4,441 women to 1 out of 4. Right? I mean, excuse me. There is no validity in anything in that book. None.
Uh-huh.
At all. He had only homosexual males, really. That he was using for the most part, because during World War II was when he did most of his quote unquote research, and nobody could talk about their personal lives to him during World War II. He didn't have anybody from the service. Most of our men and women were in the service or working in the armed force, you know, in the military business there. You know, military institutions and all that sort of thing. So there were no people that were normal that he could talk to at that time. So, yeah, he got crazy people, which was fine because that's what he wanted, you know. I mean, he would have no objection to that. So, I mean, the guy...
Well, when he was doing perverted things himself. He was into sadomasochism from what I've read. And not
yeah.
just from you. I've read a lot of these accounts now. A lot of people
mm-hmm.
know what he is, and yet he still has credibility. This is what I don't understand.
Well, we were very fortunate because Jim Jones, who did his PhD at Indiana University, I could suspect strongly that he was a sadomasochistic guy. Said that right away, but I didn't have any proof until Jim Jones wrote his biography, which was celebrating Kinsey. He really believes Kinsey is a great guy, but he's
uh-huh.
the one who described all these bizarre sadomasochistic activities in which Kinsey had been engaged, and he had worked with the Kinsey Institute. He was one of their people. Yeah.
So today, where does the Kinsey Institute stand? I mean, he's not around any longer. Are they still doing sexual experiments on people?
We don't know, right? They certainly didn't announce it when he was doing it. But the Kinsey
mm-hmm.
Institute, they've done some things that they did come up with, unfortunately. But no, they do a lot of, the Kinsey Institute is now working with the UN, they have special consultative status. So they're going all over the world and teaching people in foreign, you know, in more, quote, primitive cultures about sex. Thank you very much. That's going to do people a lot of good. And they're very involved in supporting oh, Planned Parenthood, as Secret Sex Education Counseling, and they do a lot of, oh yeah, and then they have a special app that you can use to report anything that you like about sex, rape of kids or whatever, and they map all that for you. They call you, you get the label citizen scientist, but they promise they will never turn, they won't turn you or anybody else into the police. Everything is private, you know, you give out all this information. So we have no way to know what they're really up to. Yeah. You know, it's bad news. They are bad news.
Well, I can't thank you enough for being my guest tonight. It was such a revelation when I first heard you and read about you. I've listened to some of the broadcasts with you. And you're so knowledgeable, and you've done so much research. This is not just something you pulled out of a hat. You really studied this. You go all around speaking. You're at seminars, podiums. People, you're highly respected. And anybody who wants to debate that, let them debate it, because they don't know what they're talking about. There is no way that you can debate this, because it's all in black and white. You're not making up stuff. You're taking statistics that have been printed in a book and that have been used to prove whatever this book was trying to prove without people really thinking, how would they get this? I'm embarrassed to tell you, I wasn't thinking about it either. You know,
yeah.
I just read
yeah.
statistics when I was younger, and, you know, X amount of young boys have homosexual, and I didn't question it. How did he know that? You know, I never said, well, I just accepted it without even questioning that. Who would even think that this could possibly happen, right?
Yeah, this is the United States of America. Who would think that something like that would be done to the children? But when you read it, you say, how did he know that? Where did he get those numbers from? You know?
Exactly.
What was he doing? He was standing there watching. He was clocking with a stopwatch himself, because they did that, you know, clocking these children. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Oh, no. That's what is so sad to me, is that this man still has any credibility at all, even a shred of it, after, you know, he's been exposed for what he is. Who would even quote him? And it's kind of like somebody wrote in a blog last week, because, you know, they love to listen to my podcast so they can criticize me. They wrote, who would you believe, Dr. Kinsey, a Harvard graduate, or Bonnie Kay from some rinky-dink school? But, I mean, it just shows you that people don't look at the right credentials. I'm not a child molester. He was. And you don't have to be from Harvard to understand that he is a child molester, right?
Indeed. And, you know, you have to remember, some of the most credible doctors and PhDs in Germany came from the most prestigious universities, and did the most horrific things. Harvard has a lot to answer to.
Well, Dr. Reisman, again, thank you so much. And for everyone, I'll have Dr. Reisman's, you know, her website on this broadcast, and I'll put it in my upcoming newsletter. And I'm really hoping you'll do me the honor of coming back again, you know, in a few more months to discuss this further, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
You're just, like I say, my incredible hero now.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Bob.
Yeah. And thank you.
Yes.
All right. And to all of our listeners, have a wonderful week, and I'll be back again with you next week. And thank you so much again, Dr. Reisman. I'll look forward to your return.
You're very welcome.
All right. Bye-bye. Good night, everybody.